This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news that will be followed by Panorama and then our feature of health and healing. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to the Jubilee Year 2025. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. In a special message to journalists on Wednesday morning, about the update on the health of Pope Francis, the Holy See Press Office said that he had another good and restful night at Rome's Gemelli Hospital. It said further that although his condition remains critical, it is stable and he continues to receive treatment for bilateral pneumonia. When he woke up on Wednesday morning, the Pope sat up in his armchair from where his therapeutic procedures continued. Medical updates for Wednesday evening were expected also to include the results of the pulmonary CT scan carried out on Tuesday evening. The doctor's update says that there have been no acute respiratory episodes and that even the situation of the blood in his body continues to be stable. In the morning after receiving the Eucharist, the Pope sat up for his work routine. The press office is giving two daily statements that have kept the faithful informed about the Pope's health since his admission to Gemelli Hospital in Rome on Friday, 14th February, following a bout of bronchitis. Meantime, although the midweek general audiences of the Holy Father have been temporarily suspended for the entire period that he is sick, Pope Francis had prepared his catechesis for the general audience scheduled for February 26th. In his teaching, Pope Francis reflected on the gospel reading of the day about the presentation in the temple and invited the faithful to imitate Simeon and Anna as model pilgrims of faith. Christopher Wells has this report.
Continuing his catechetical cycle on Jesus Christ, our hope, the Holy Father reflected on the mystery of the presentation of Jesus in the temple 40 days after his birth. The presentation demonstrates Mary and Joseph's obedience to the law and shows them not only integrating Jesus into a family, a people, and a covenant, but also caring for him as they themselves grow in their understanding of a vocation that is far greater than themselves. Pope Francis then turned his attention to the two other figures in the temple for the presentation, the elderly Simeon and Anna. Simeon, longing for the fulfillment of God's promises to Israel, is inspired to take the child Jesus in his arms and is consoled at seeing the Savior of Israel. Pope Francis explained that Simeon is a witness of faith received as a gift and passed on to others, a witness of hope that does not disappoint, a witness of God's love which fills the human heart with joy and peace. Alongside Simeon, Anna, a widow entirely dedicated to service and prayer, also sees salvation in the child Jesus. At the sight of the Christ child, the Pope said, Anna praises the God of Israel, who in that little one has redeemed his people, and she shares the news with others, generously spreading the prophetic message. Pope Francis continued, the song of redemption from these two elderly figures thus becomes an announcement of the Jubilee for the entire people and for the whole world. In the Temple of Jerusalem, hope is rekindled in hearts because Christ, our hope, has entered it. I'm Christopher Wells.
Even as he recuperates in Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis on Tuesday granted an audience to Cardinal Secretary of State Pietro Parolin and Archbishop Edgar Pagnapara, substitute for General Affairs. During that encounter, the Holy Father authorized the promulgation of various decrees for the causes of saints. In this way, he allowed the advancing of the causes of canonization for the United States military chaplain Father Emil Capone, Italian layman Bartolo Longo, the Apostle of the Rosary, and five others. Also on Tuesday, the Holy See Press Office said in a statement that Pope Francis had appointed two new Secretaries General of the Vatican City Governorate. The two new Secretaries General are Archbishop Emilio Napa, currently serving as Assistant Secretary of the Dicastery for Evangelization and President of the Pontifical Commission Societies, and lawyer Giuseppe Puglisi Alibrandi, who until his appointment was Deputy Secretary General of the Governorate of Vatican City. Additionally, the Holy Father officially allowed Sister Raffaella Petrini to assume her role as President of the Vatican City Governorate and entrusted her with the authority to delegate specific duties and responsibilities to the newly appointed Secretaries General as might be needed. Pope Francis on Wednesday appointed Reverend Josaphat Jackson Bududu to be the Auxiliary Bishop of the Metropolitan Archdiocese of Tabora in Tanzania. Monsignor Bududu, who was born on 6th March 1977 in Kaliua in Tabora. Following his priestly formation, he was ordained to the priesthood on 9th July 2009. He has since his ordination held a number of ecclesial responsibilities. Until his appointment, Bishop-elect Bududu was the vicar for consecrated life of the Archdiocese of Tabora, while at the same time he served as parish priest of St. Joseph in Kipalapala. He was also the spiritual director of the religious congregation of the Sisters of the Daughters of Mary in Tabora. He holds a doctorate in spirituality obtained from the Tamil Nadu Institute of Spirituality and St. Peter's Pontifical Institute in Bangalore in India. Some 7,000 people have died since January in fighting in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The Prime Minister of the DRC told a high-level meeting of the Human Rights Council in Geneva on Monday. Judith Suminwa said about 3,000 deaths were reported in Goma alone and about 450,000 people were left without shelter after 90 displacement camps were destroyed. Nathan Morley tells us more.
The Prime Minister, Judith Suminwa, told the United Nations Human Rights Council on Monday that a significant number of civilians were among the dead. Suminwa warned that the security situation in the eastern DRC had reached alarming levels, noting around 3,000 deaths in Goma, the capital of North Kivu province. She added that more than 2,500 bodies were buried without identification, whilst another 1,500 remained in morgues. She said there was a significant mass of civilians who were part of these dead. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley reporting.
In Sudan, meantime, the charity Médecins Sans Frontières has announced the suspension of its aid activities in the Zamazama refugee camp in the Darfur region, citing an unbearable working conditions due to the civil war that is ongoing in the country. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The ruling party in Chad won 45 of the 46 seats at stake in the country's first Senate election on Tuesday. Provisional results, partially contested by the main opposition party, showed, if confirmed, the win will fortify President Mahamat Idriss Deby's grip on power. Mr. Deby, who is 40, seized power in 2021 following the battlefield death of his father and predecessor, Idriss Deby Itno. In May, he won 61% of votes in a tense presidential election that two losing candidates unsuccessfully challenged on allegations of fraud. His Patriotic Salvation Movement, MPS party, has a two-thirds majority in the National Assembly. In its statement on Tuesday, the National Electoral Body said that the party won all but one of the 46 seats up for election in the Senate vote. 46 people were killed when a Sudanese army plane crashed in a residential area near a military airport in the capital's twin city, Omdurman, the Khartoum State Media Office said. The crash took place late on Tuesday near the Wadi Saidna military airport in northern Omdurman. The Sudanese army has said several military personnel and civilians were killed in the incident, but did not provide further details. Military sources said the plane crash was most likely due to technical reasons. Among those killed was Major General Bahr Ahmed, a senior commander in Khartoum, who previously served as the commander of the army across the entire capital, military sources said. Sudan has been in a state of civil war since April 2023, when tensions between the military and a notorious paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, exploded into open warfare. Nigeria's National Museum Commission will be responsible for retrieving and keeping priceless Benin bronzes, taking on the task with the assent of the Oba, or King of the Historic Kingdom of Benin. The royal ruler was appointed sole owner and custodian of the objects nearly 2 years ago. Olubile Holloway, Director General of the National Commission for Museums and Monuments, told Reuters that the Oba did not have the infrastructure to care for the bronzes and has given his commission the blessing to display, conserve and to pursue repatriation of these objects. Nigeria is trying to recover the thousands of bronze sculptures and castings that were looted by British soldiers during a raid on the then separate Kingdom of Benin, located in what is now southern Nigeria in 1897. Nigeria has announced plans to make it easier for travelers to obtain electronic visas through automation. Under the proposed plan, travelers can apply online for short-stay visas with approvals granted within 24 to 48 hours. Once approved, the e-visa will be sent to the applicant's email, eliminating the need for a physical sticker at the airport. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
You are welcome to this week's edition of Health and Healing. Healthcare facilities such as clinics, dispensaries, health centers, and hospitals are places where sick people go to be treated of their diseases and to receive advice about their health. But did you know that you can get diseases from these facilities? In this edition, we examine the extent to which patients are at risk of infections in these facilities. Dr. Richard Johnson is a specialist in infectious diseases.
Some of the highest risk places are in intensive locations like an operating theater, but even in other locations it's possible for patients to pick up an infection, especially if healthcare workers are moving back and forth from higher risk settings to lower risk ones, because they can actually transport bacteria and viruses on their hands. And that's why one of the most important measures for infection prevention and control is for healthcare workers to practice proper hand hygiene. And that just means regularly cleaning their hands wherever they're interacting with patients. To do this, of course, they need to have access to plenty of water and soap. And also alcohol rubs can be very useful because they're quicker and easier for staff to use. It's important to protect patients and their caregivers and visitors, but also healthcare workers themselves, because doctors, nurses, and other staff in healthcare facilities are very vulnerable to getting infections through all the contacts that they have with sick people.
The World Health Organization, the WHO, issued a report recently based on its research findings on healthy facilities around the world. According to that report, most infections in healthy facilities are spread by poor hand hygiene.
This report covers water, sanitation, and hygiene, as well as waste management and environmental cleaning services in healthcare facilities throughout the world. The most shocking finding in the report was that only half of healthcare facilities worldwide had basic hygiene services. And that just means having hand-washing facilities where patients receive care, as well as in bathrooms. Besides health workers cleaning their hands regularly, it's also important for patients and visitors to be able to wash their hands when they use the bathroom. And that's just not possible in about half of the healthcare facilities in the world today. And the situation is even worse in the least developed countries, where only a third of healthcare facilities had basic hygiene services. We also found that some hospitals didn't have basic waste management services. And that just means safe segregation, treatment, and disposal of infectious wastes, as well as sharp materials like used needles. When there's inadequate water, sanitation, and hand hygiene, or poor waste management and infection prevention and control, that can lead to antimicrobial resistance, where the standard medicines that are used to treat infections become ineffective. And this is a really serious public health risk.
Dr. Johnson recommends the following for patients and healthcare workers to minimize infections in healthcare facilities.
If you're in one of those half of all healthcare facilities that do have water and soap or alcohol-based hand rub available, use them to clean your hands. And this is something that healthcare workers should do every day as part of their job, but it's also important for patients and their caregivers. If the healthcare center doesn't have water and soap or alcohol rub for cleaning hands, then you can complain. It's not that expensive for hospitals and even smaller facilities to make sure that hand-washing materials are available wherever patients receive care and also at toilets. Healthcare managers can make sure that the resources that they do have are used effectively for improving water and sanitation and hygiene and infection prevention and control. When healthcare facilities don't have basic water, sanitation, and hygiene services, they just can't provide safe healthcare.
Dr. Richard Johnson, an infectious disease specialist and medical researcher. In 2016, member states of the World Health Organization launched an initiative called Global Hearts to tackle the threat of heart disease, also known as cardiovascular conditions, and their causes. Heart diseases are categorized as non-communicable diseases, the NCDs, that is, diseases that are not passed from person to person. The initiative started in a dozen of countries, particularly in Africa and Asia. Now, 10 years later, it is being implemented in more than 100 countries around the world. Some of its achievements include waging a successful campaign against some of the causes of heart disease, for example, tobacco and salt consumption. Dr. Terralyn Malcolm is a medical researcher of the World Health Organization. She explains how the initiative has evolved in the last 10 years.
The initiative focuses on improving blood pressure, diabetes control, promoting healthier lifestyle, and reducing risk factors, which are critical steps towards reducing premature mortality and improving overall health outcomes. Prevention and management of cardiovascular diseases remains a national priority. The shared goal is to build a health system that is responsive to the needs of all, particularly those at the highest risk for cardiovascular diseases.
Another achievement is that countries have integrated the Heart Initiative in their primary health care systems. This means services aimed at detecting the disease and information about the disease are being offered at community health facilities, which are also being manned by more qualified health care practitioners than before. Dr. Sean Charles is a heart specialist. He explains the importance of integrating the Heart Initiative in the primary health care system.
Primary health care is the cornerstone of the healthcare system. Primary health care is where the majority of the population should receive their care. We do not desire for anyone to go to the hospital because often persons arrive at the hospital when their condition is at an advanced stage where there is little that can be done.
Cardiovascular conditions are the leading causes of death among non-communicable diseases, especially in poor countries. Dr. Donald Noel is a specialist in cardiovascular diseases.
73% of all of NCD deaths occur in low and middle-income countries. And of all the NCD's deaths, cardiovascular disease is the leading cause. Treating and having better management of cardiovascular disease like hypertension in the primary healthcare setting is going to significantly reduce cardiovascular risk and morbidity and mortality in the population.
Dr. Donald Noel, a specialist in cardiovascular diseases. Earlier, we had Dr. Sean Charles, a heart specialist, and Dr. Terralyn Malcolm, a medical researcher of the World Health Organization. And that was Health and Healing for this week. This has been Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
Pilgrims of Hope, a weekly program of news, views, and reflections on the Jubilee Year 2025.
Hello. Welcome to another segment of our program, Pilgrims of Hope, on the 2025 Jubilee Year events, coming to you from the English African section of Vatican Radio. I am Sister Mary Jane Claire Anikwe, and I'm here once again to accompany you on this journey. There has indeed been a lot of concern this past week concerning the health of the Holy Father, Pope Francis. But as Pilgrims of Hope, we rely on God's intervention and trust in His holy will. For this reason, thousands of deacons from across the globe during the closing mass for the Jubilee of Deacons offered special prayers for the quick recovery of the Holy Father, Pope Francis. The Jubilee of Deacons, according to the Jubilee calendar, took place from Friday 21st to Sunday 23rd of February 2025. The event had in attendance over 6,000 deacons, with 4,000 of them coming from Italy, while the others came from the United States, France, Spain, Brazil, Germany, Mexico, Poland, Colombia, United Kingdom, Canada, Cameroon, Nigeria, India, Indonesia, and Australia. On Friday, 21st of February, the pilgrims were welcomed in Rome as they joined together in common recitation of the Liturgy of the Hours. Due to their large number, they were shared in 12 groups in 12 churches in the center of Rome, from where they had a bishop each leading each group. After the Liturgy of the Hours, there was a special catechesis for deacons held in different language groups with the theme, Concrete Signs of Hope in the Diaconal Ministry, after which there was time given for sharing of experiences by the deacons. The following day, Saturday, 22nd February, the pilgrims arrived to the Basilica of St. Peter's, Vatican City, to make their pilgrimage to the Holy Door, also participating in the international meetings organized by the Dicastery for the Clergy with the theme, Deacons in a Synodal and Missionary Church, and in the evening, prayed together the evening prayer one of the Sunday. The concluding Mass for the event was celebrated on Sunday, 23rd February 2025, at the Basilica of St. Peter's, Vatican City, during which 23 new deacons were ordained, 2 from Brazil, 6 from Colombia, 1 from France, 3 from Italy, 3 from Mexico, 2 from Poland, 3 from Spain, and 3 from the United States. Archbishop Fisichella, the pro-prefect for the Dicastery for Evangelization, who was delegated by the Holy Father Pope Francis in his absence, presided over the Holy Mass and the ordination. In the homily prepared by the Holy Father and read by Archbishop Rino Fisichella, Pope Francis called on all the deacons to reflect on gratuity from the three specific aspects of their Christian life and their ministry, forgiveness, selfless service, and communion. In his words, the Holy Father said, First, the proclamation of forgiveness is an essential part of your ministry as deacons. And Jesus points out its necessity and importance according to the Gospel of St. Luke, when he said, Love your enemies. Hence, we need to be able to forgive and to ask forgiveness, to rebuild relationships, and even to choose not to withhold our love from those who hurt or betray us. Secondly, selfless service must be an essential dimension of your very being. Through your ministry, you devote yourselves to being sculptors and painters of the merciful face of the Father and witness to the mystery of the Holy Trinity, following the words of Christ in the Gospel of Luke, do good and lend, expect nothing in return. Finally, gratuity as a source of communion creates bonds because it expresses and nurtures a togetherness that has no other aim but the gift of self and the good of others. The Holy Father urged them all to follow the footsteps of their patron saint, Saint Lawrence, who showed the poor as the treasures of the church. He reminded them of the need of telling others that they are loved, not only by words but also by good actions. He went ahead to remind the newly ordained deacons of the paths they have chosen, which requires lowering and divesting of self, and according to St. Paul, leaving the earthly man and putting on charity, the man of heaven. He entrusted all present to the Blessed Virgin Mary and to St. Lawrence, that through them they may experience every expression of their ministry with humble and loving hearts, and to be in gratuity, apostles of forgiveness, selfless servants, and builders of communion. It was indeed a spirit-filled event for all those who were in attendance. This brings us to the end of today's segment of our program as we continue to offer prayers for his quick recovery. I hope to meet you all at the same time next week. I still remain your companion on this journey, Sister Mary Jane Claire Anikwe. Jubilee Prayer.
Father in heaven, let the faith you have given us in your Son, Jesus Christ, our brother, and the flame of charity enkindled in our hearts by the Holy Spirit, reawaken in us the blessed hope for the coming of your kingdom. May your grace transform us into tireless cultivators of the seeds of the gospel. May those seeds transform from within both humanity and the whole cosmos in the sure expectation of a new heaven and a new earth, when, with the powers of evil vanquished, your glory will shine eternally. May the grace of the Jubilee reawaken in us pilgrims of hope, a yearning for the treasures of heaven. May that same grace spread the joy and peace of our Redeemer throughout the earth. To you, our God, eternally blessed, be glory and praise forever. Amen.
You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. We shall be back with you again at the same time tomorrow. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.